Introducing two new and improved Jeremy's Razors. Fighting the left and building the future means constantly bringing your best, and that's exactly what Jeremy's Razors is doing. Choose between the new and improved Precision 5 Razor for an exceptionally smooth and close shave, or the brand new Sprint 3 Razor for a quick, clean shave. The new razors feature top-to-bottom redesign. Enjoy an ergonomic handle designed for superior durability. The new coated stainless steel blades are sharper, so they last longer. Increased flexibility allows the razor to better contour to your face to reduce nicks and cuts. Plus, the lubricating strip is now equipped with argan oil and aloe. It's time to toss out that woke razor and get yourself a Precision 5 or Sprint 3 trial kit today. Pledge to fight the left and build a future with Jeremy's Razors. Go to jeremysrazors.com and order yours today.
In politics, as in life, one has to play the hand one is dealt. Ideally, one can turn lemons into lemonade. One can mix as many metaphors as one likes. You get the point. You've got to make the best of even bad situations, which is precisely what President Trump did perfectly, as you will see, on day two of his historic criminal trial, when Trump finished off a day of prosecution and political persecution by visiting a bodega in West Harlem.
Going to a bodega. You know about that, right?
Four more years in Harlem. Now, the bodega Trump visited, it's not just any bodega. He did not hit the bodega for a Mountain Dew and a tin of Zin. This was the Sana convenience store where 2 years ago, a worker was arrested and charged with murder for defending himself against a thug who was attacking him. You probably remember this story. We covered it at the time. You can see there's this guy pushes this poor, somewhat elderly man. He's attacking a 61-year-old man, and he's trying to rob the place, I guess. He figured the relatively elderly man was a soft target. The man's just sitting there minding his own business, and this thug just keeps getting in his face, demanding money, I guess, from the cash register, keeps pushing up on this guy. Finally, this guy has enough, grabs a knife, and just stabs the thug and defends himself. What the criminal did not expect was that the relatively elderly man would defend himself. No one expects that ever anymore. Now, in a properly functioning city, this guy, Jose Alba, would have been given a key to the city for his act of bravery, protecting his fellow worker and helping to curb crime. Instead, the leftist DA, Alvin Bragg, charged him with murder until the videotape of the incident came out and caused such a public outcry at the injustice that Bragg had to drop the charges. In any case, this visit from President Trump was politically brilliant on every front. Trump, whether you love him or hate him, I think you have to admit, is the consummate showman. And this visit showed three things in vivid detail. One, it showed that Trump connects with the common man. This is not a $1,000 a plate gala. This is a bodega in Harlem, which means that, two, it showed that Trump connects with voters who are not typical Republicans. Mitt Romney does not host campaign events north of 125th Street. I suspect Mitt Romney doesn't host campaign events north of the penthouses on 85th Street. Trump does. But the most brilliant aspect of this stunt is number three. It shows that the New York justice system is insane at best, and likely it's just corrupt. Because Alvin Bragg is the man currently prosecuting Donald Trump. Alvin Bragg is the kind of guy who would prosecute an innocent older man for defending himself against dangerous crooks. Alvin Bragg, who only failed to imprison that man when the public outcry against the injustice reached a fever pitch. I think I'm having deja vu. I'm Michael Knowles. This is The Michael Knowles Show. Welcome back to the show. Speaking of crime, an Indianapolis judge has found a woman not guilty for smothering her child to death while high on meth, despite the woman's confession and despite eyewitness testimony. There's so much more to say. First, though, go to ramp.com/Knowles. When you are running a business, time is money, honey. That is why I'm very excited to introduce you to Ramp. If you are a finance professional looking for a better way to maximize productivity and cut wasteful spending, then Ramp could be for you. Ramp is a corporate card and spend management software designed to help you save time and put money back in your pocket. With Ramp, you can issue cards to every employee with limits and restrictions. You can also stop wasting time at the end of every month by automating your expense reporting. Ramp's accounting software automatically collects receipts and categorizes your expenses in real time so that you don't have to. You will never have to chase down a receipt again. Your employees will no longer spend hours submitting expense reports. The time that you will save each month on employee expenses will allow you to close your books 8 times faster. Ramp is so easy to use. You get started in less than 15 minutes, whether you have 5 employees or 5,000. Right now, get $250 when you join Ramp. Go to ramp.com/Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S. This is ramp.com/K-N-O-W-L-E-S. ramp.com/K-N-O-W-L-E-S. Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members FDIC. Terms and conditions apply. Speaking of the Trump prosecution, also a little quick recap here from day two. Attorneys for President Trump had a potential juror dismissed after they found posts on the jurors' social media pages attacking Trump and specifically calling for Trump to be put in jail. Posts that said, lock him up. And we're not just talking about one juror here, okay? The judge, even this dirtbag judge who's going to try to make Trump miss his child's high school graduation, even he acknowledged, okay, if you post lock him up on your social media, you're probably not going to be an impartial juror in the case of Donald Trump. But how many jurors are we going to have to dismiss here? Of 96 potential jurors on the first day, more than 50 were dismissed after indicating that they were unable to be impartial. One person, so the one guy, you know, lock him up guy, he's gone. Then another juror posted on social media saying, quote, Republicans projected to pick up 70 seats in prison. That was his little commentary during the elections. That potential juror, also not selected. Then another one, there was another one who posted a video on March 27th, so not that long ago, featuring Trump with the words, I'm dumb as F-U-C-K. Turns out if you post that video of the defendant weeks before the trial with disparaging comments, turns out you're not an impartial juror. The problem here is not this crazy leftist juror or that crazy leftist juror, this guy who's got a grudge for Trump. The problem is with the type of prosecution this is. When you're prosecuting a president, nobody is impartial, especially when it comes to Donald Trump, who causes emotions to run high in his supporters and in his opponents. There is not one person in America who does not have a strong opinion about Donald Trump. Not one person over the age of 7 who doesn't have a strong opinion about Donald Trump. And in part, it's because he's a polarizing and eccentric figure, but in part, it's just because he was the president. This is why, until the Democrats blew up our constitutional order with these unjust prosecutions and certainly imprudent prosecutions, this is why we didn't prosecute presidents. Because, put their personality aside, they're the president. Everyone has a strong opinion. There is no way to have an impartial juror adjudicate the evidence, weigh the claims from the prosecution and the defense, and come to some politically neutral conclusion. We're talking about the president of the United States here. One more reason why, before the Democrats started turning us into a banana republic, we said, you know, even if some presidents get up to some crafty and dodgy stuff, like the Clintons, for instance, we're just not going to prosecute those people. Even if Hillary, you know, murdered like hundreds of people. No, I'm joking. I'm sort of joking. Please, Hillary, I'm joking. Please, I'm a family. Don't get me. Even if past presidents pretty clearly committed crimes or at least engaged in some degree of corruption, we're not going to prosecute them because that's bad for the office of the president. It's bad for our political order. Forget about the individual. And maybe the individual actually did commit some crime, but it's just not prudent. And it's not even practical under our current system of law, which demands impartial jurors, blind lady justice. Not possible here. So, okay, you dismiss 50 out of the 96 jurors. That still leaves you 46 jurors who can't be impartial. No one, not one person above the age of 7 in this country can be impartial when it comes to Trump or any other president. Speaking of New York, some illegal aliens just took to the New York City Council to complain. You see, because New York City has been flooded by illegal aliens. There are so many illegal aliens in New York causing so many problems that even the liberal Democrat mayor of New York, Eric Adams, is pulling his hair out. He doesn't have any hair left, but if he did have hair left, he would be pulling his hair out about it. He said illegal immigration is going to ruin New York City. He tried to schedule a meeting with the Biden White House to address this. And then coincidentally, a couple days before the meeting, an investigation, a corruption investigation was launched into Eric Adams. And then he kind of dropped the matter. I think probably a little bit of a heavy-handed message coming from the Biden team saying, quit attacking us on illegal immigration. But even the Democrats in New York know this is a big problem. So many there. Where have they been putting them? They've been putting them at luxury hotels. One of my favorite hotels in New York, the Roosevelt Hotel, became an illegal alien shelter. And I usually spend some time around that area when I'm in New York. I walked by there. It's just fighting age men. It's just young fighting age men from Latin America and from Africa and the Caribbean, all over the world, but specifically the third world. Maybe you see one or two women, one or two kids. It's mostly just young fighting age men, economic migrants, who are just hanging around super nice hotels in New York for free. And now, what are they doing? They're showing up to the New York City Council to thank them for this incredible generosity? No, they're there to whine and complain that the accommodations and the food aren't good enough.
At the shelter, the food, my kids cannot eat the food at the shelter. And on Ramadan time, we couldn't eat because when you come back for the breaks, the food is no good at all. And they give us 2 months to stay at the shelter, and then you have to go out again with your luggages and the kids and find another place. It's very difficult. And also, I have a kid that is like 18 to 19. Until now, he doesn't have no school.
Okay. I'm going to put myself in the shoes of these foreign nationals who have come over here and then just taken our stuff, many of the people who are coming through, I can't speak to these individuals specifically, but many of the foreigners who have come here illegally. And then they come and they take our stuff and they stay in really nice accommodations, at least by my standards. Maybe they have higher standards than I do, but by my standards, Roosevelt Hotel's pretty nice. And they eat our food and they abuse our system of law and they use our resources, including our educational resources, though some seem to use them more than others. But I'm putting myself in their shoes and I say, okay, it's probably disorienting being in a totally different country, totally different culture. It is disorienting if you only get to stay in one sort of free housing for a few months, and then maybe you have to move to some other free housing. And maybe you don't have a private chef who's going to make your meals exactly to your taste every single day. So, you know, I wanted chicken tonight, but instead they served me beef. Oh, I don't want beef again tonight. I had beef 2 nights ago. Okay, sure. I'm sure that's a little uncomfortable. And you come to a country that doesn't generally celebrate your holidays because we're not a Muslim country. So you really take Ramadan seriously. Americans don't really know very much about Ramadan because again, we're not a Muslim country. We're happy to accommodate people, but yeah, okay. Maybe the Ramadan celebrations aren't quite up to your standards either. Hey, here's an idea. Don't come to our country. How about you stay in your country with your customs and your food and your housing and your resources and your tax base and your system of laws? If you like that so much more, how about you stay there? And if you come to America, how about you say, thank you? How about first you say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I've come here in many cases illegally. Sorry for breaking your basic laws. You might even consider going back, and if you want to immigrate, doing it the right way. But if you're going to stick around here, how about you just say, hey, thanks. Thanks for all the free stuff. And thanks for not prosecuting us. And thanks for, why'd you come here in the first place? Why, if it's so bad here and all the free stuff isn't up to your standards, how about you just consider for 1 second why you even came here in the first place? Now, in a sane, healthy country, the New York City Council would say exactly that to these people. Say, have you lost your minds? Have you lost your minds that you're attacking us for giving you free stuff and treating you kindly and welcoming you? Sorry, we didn't put you up at the Shangri-La. Sorry that you had to settle for the Roosevelt Hotel. But we don't live in a sane country. So the New York City Council basically is on their side. There's so much more to say. First, though, go to zapmydebt.com. Does your debt keep you tossing and turning at night? It's like you can't get away from it. Well, the unfortunate reality is that our banking system is designed to trap you in debt. These insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. Thankfully, there is a new way out of the debt trap with Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions is not like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have new aggressive strategies to end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. They will help find programs to write off your balances so that you owe less. They can stop those threatening phone calls. The bottom line is that Pivotal Debt Solutions will find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions at zapmydebt.com. Talk to them for free and find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. That is zapmydebt.com. The one way I know that some of these migrants have assimilated to America is they are adopting the kind of language that typifies the American liberal establishment class. What they say is that all these standards that have not been met for the foreigners comes down to racism.
This is unacceptable. This is shameful time in New York history. This city is not friendly for all people. It is anti-African and xenophobic. You all are responsible for this pain and suffering that will affect us for generations to come. But you also can change this for better. New York City should at least live up to the standard it projects to the world. Africans deserve dignity and respect. We are not animal. You have a habit to receive all over immigrant, all over community. Why is it going to be done only to the African? Because it's an embedded protocol of racism and xenophobia in this city. And I want all my fellow Africans to know what it is that they will face if they come in New York City.
I also would like Africans and Latin Americans and Asians and even some kind of Europeans, not that there's very much European immigration, but I want everybody to know, yes, you don't, when you immigrate into America, especially when you do it illegally, I hope it's going to be a little difficult. I hope there are some barriers to that, to breaking our laws and, you know, effectively erasing our national borders. I hope everyone knows that. Unfortunately, that is not the case, though, because these people get to show up and mouth off to the duly elected representatives of New York City for the New Yorkers, I don't know, not just completely rolling over and being doormats and giving them every single thing that they want. This is the words were very difficult to make out because this woman doesn't speak English properly. She hasn't even assimilated enough to speak English properly. But she said that when these foreigners are not given all the food and all the money and all the resources and all the accommodations that they want, that it is racism and xenophobia. It's racism and xenophobia. What are you talking about? Is it racism when I don't get a free room at the Roosevelt Hotel? Is that anti-Italian discrimination? Anti-WASP, anti-Mayflower discrimination? I don't think so. When I break the law, not that I break the law, but if I were to break the law, would that be discrimination if I were arrested? Well, here's the difference. If I broke the law, I probably would be arrested. And these people, at least the illegal immigrants among them, break the law and they're not arrested. They're actually, they have the red carpet rolled out for them and they're given almost everything they want, but not quite. And the New York City Council just nods along. That's the sickest part. This is where I actually don't totally blame these guys who are part of the waves of mass migration and the illegal immigration, is they are being invited in by the liberal establishment. Joe Biden is inviting these people in. He could not possibly make it clearer that these guys can break our law with impunity. And so is it any surprise when they get a little high-handed about it? When they start to demand even more? No, it's no surprise at all. They've been encouraged in that by our liberal establishment class. The real shame here is there is some degree of shame on the foreigners who are so obviously ungrateful to what they've been for what they've been given in America. But the greater shame is on the New York City Council. And the greater shame is on the liberal establishment all the way up to Joe Biden. Now, speaking of racism and xenophobia, speaking of racial politics, Joy Reid on MSNBC has just explained, finally, what the Trump prosecutions are really about. And what they are really about is getting Whitey.
There is something wonderfully poetic about the fact that despite the fact that even if convicted, he's not going to go to prison, the first person to actually criminally prosecute Donald Trump is a black Harvard grad, the very kind of person that his former staff, the people who worked for him, Stephen Miller, et cetera, want to never be at Harvard Law School. But he was. And he came out and graduated. He's prosecuting you, Donald. And a black woman is doing that same exact thing in Georgia. And a black woman forced you to pay a $175 million fine that's out now also in question because the people who put it up, that might not be legit. Donald Trump is being held to account by the very multicultural, multiracial democracy that he's trying to dismantle. And for me, there's something poetic and actually wonderful about that. It says something good about our country that we're still capable of having that happen. Go DEI. My DEIs are bringing it home.
Joy Reid says there's something wonderful, beautiful, poetic about white people punishing, about black people rather, punishing white people. That's it. That's what that whole monologue came down to. And what's amazing, I have such low expectations for American politics at this point. I have such extremely low expectations for the political left. And even still, it never occurred to me that anyone would look at the Trump prosecutions through a racial lens. Never occurred to me that Alvin Bragg is a black guy. Never really occurred to me that Fannie Willis is a black woman and that somehow had anything to do with the prosecution. Truly, it never once crossed my mind. There are all other aspects of injustice that occurred to me about the Trump prosecution, but that part, it never crossed my mind until that. And now I can't unsee it. For the libs, every single thing comes back to the nastiest, most elemental kind of grievance and personal interest. Get what we have to prosecute the former president, upend our political order, try to imprison the current leader of the opposition so that we can experience the wonderful beauty of black people getting whitey. So says Joy Reid. Now, what I recommend to, delve a little further into these things, but also not have to listen to Joy Reid, is to go check out uncensored and deleted episodes of Michael And, right now available exclusively to members of Daily Wire Plus. Michael And is my favorite type of show that I'm doing right now. It's these hour, 2 hour, sometimes 3 hour interviews with offbeat kind of people. Just interviewed a really top pornographic actress who was one of the top on OnlyFans, and then she had a major conversion. And so we kind of probed that a little bit, what that means. I just spoke to her. We've got a lot more exciting interviews coming out. A pretty big one that got many, many, many millions of views was when I interviewed Father Dan Rehill, an exorcist here in Nashville. Here's a teaser from that most popular episode, which you can now watch ad-free on Daily Wire Plus, Michael And the Exorcist.
If you start digging into the occult, you're opening a door, and you might not be strong enough to close it. And then you have to call me.
Someone wrote into my show, said, Michael, if you could meet the devil.
Met him twice, personally.
How'd that go?
Not well the first time.
The full episode and many more are available to watch now on Daily Wire Plus. Speaking of white guys, a little bit of a hard segue. Rand Paul has just raised a question that he observes no one really is asking in the Israel, Iran, Gaza. I know it's becoming now a really a true Mideast regional war might become a world war. He's saying there's one question that nobody's really asking about in the conflict. Here's the question.
You know, I think we're very fortunate that it was ineffective and that Israel's and U.S. defenses were able to stop 97% of this. But I think one question that's not being asked enough this morning is everybody's asking, what is the next step to escalation? There's another question. What are the possibility that we could de-escalate the situation? You know, every action has a reaction. Hamas attacked on October 7th. Awful, dreadful. Israel kills two generals. Now Iran attacks. So every action has a reaction. And is there a possibility that this could be de-escalated at this point? And I think people ought to take a breath, wait a little bit. In medicine, we're taught to check your own pulse before you check the patient's pulse. You need to calm down and think with a clear head before we move forward.
I would like to correct Senator Paul here. There is at least one other person who has been asking this question since day one. And that would be yours truly. Where I've observed from the beginning, Israel's attacked. Israel obviously has a right to self-defense, and Israel has certain national interests in this war. The Palestine Liberation Movement, backed by Iran and involving other powers, has obvious interests in this war. And some of those interests align more or less closely with American interests, but they're distinct. America has its own interest in this war, and America's interest in this war is to contain it, to wind it down. Nothing good will come to America by this war escalating. The Israelis might get something out of the war escalating. The Iranians might get something out of the war escalating. The Palestinian Arabs probably won't get anything out of the war escalating because they're just used as pawns. But I guess in principle they could. But America really can't get anything out of the war escalating. So the question that Rand Paul asks is so important here. And he's right. He's one of the very few people in national politics who's asking this. How do we wind this thing down? Very difficult. All the grand strategists, they want to see three steps ahead, and they want to, they're grand strategists, you know, so they get a little pulled into grandiosity sometimes of how this is going to expand. Okay, how do we step back from the brink, especially when we have pretty much nothing to gain? So we turn to our commander-in-chief. And what is our commander-in-chief's idea of how to de-escalate the war? Well, he's telling Israel not to invade Haifa.
And I made it clear to Israelis, don't move on Haifa. It's just not, I mean, anyway, I just, look what we did recently when Israel was attacked.
Now, I actually agree with President Biden here. It's rare that I agree with him, but I agree it would be unwise of the Israelis to move on Haifa because Haifa is a town in Israel. So it would be weird, wouldn't it? It would be weird if the IDF invaded an Israeli town. I don't know that it would escalate the war, but it would confuse a lot of people, and it would be just weird, I guess. I'm not sure that President Biden knows that Haifa is a town in Israel. He certainly does not. Did not when he said that. I guess he is confusing it with Rafah, a town in southern Gaza, one of the last real strongholds that Netanyahu says he has to invade in order to accomplish his military objectives. But he just confused the two towns. And you might say, well, it's just a gaffe. Well, it was just a little slip of the tongue. Yeah. Joe Biden has a lot of little gaffes, a lot of little slips of the tongue. And they don't seem to be the kind of gaffes that Biden used to have, where he'd say something outrageous or offensive simply because he's callous. These are the kind of gaffes that happen when you are in obvious cognitive decline and you constantly confuse the names of people and places. You constantly confuse dates. You don't remember when you were vice president of the United States, as we found out when Joe Biden was giving testimony to a special investigator. We are at a very precarious moment in world affairs. We've got a very weak economy. We have effectively no borders in the United States. We have a lot of civil strife. There's a movie out now about what the next American civil war is going to look like. And the reason that a movie like that is coming out is because people are sincerely afraid of it. They recognize that there's a lot of social discord. On top of that, you've got the first major war in Europe breaking out since World War II, and you've got a war in the Middle East that continues to escalate. that requires a very sophisticated hand to manage. And you got this guy who is president who doesn't remember the name of towns in Israel, the name of towns in the Palestinian territories, probably doesn't remember his own name most of the time. He is simply not up to the task. There is a degree of competence required to be president. The way we view the presidency these days, everything's just ideological. Everything is just, well, are you on this team or that team? Do you begin with this set of premises or this set of premises? What are you, or do you have these first principles or these first principles, you know, red or blue? And that stuff matters. I don't mean to downplay these kinds of distinctions, but there's also just a degree of competence necessary. If you went to an average high school in America and you found the biggest stoner, bum, loser, flunky, and you said, hey man, you're the president now, good luck, I think all of us would agree that's probably not wise. That's probably not prudent. He probably wouldn't succeed. Not because his ideology is off, but because he just lacks the basic competence required to do the job. He doesn't remember names and places, and he doesn't have functioning faculties of reason. Well, unfortunately, that's the position we're in now with Joe Biden. Not just because he was kind of a flunky in school, which he was, but also because he's just extremely old. And even beyond that, there are 80-year-olds who are very highly functioning, but this guy is in very clear cognitive decline. Next thing you know, he's going to launch an American attack on Haifa, and that's really going to send the situation into a tizzy. Right now, you can subscribe to the Michael Knowles Show YouTube channel. You can destroy that like button with facts and logic. You can ring and ding-dong ding that bell. Speaking of foreign wars, House Speaker Mike Johnson, the conservative Republican who was put into office to replace Kevin McCarthy, that squish Kevin McCarthy, that big lib Kevin McCarthy, the conservatives in the House ousted him because he, in large part, because he wanted to spend a lot of money funding the war in Ukraine. So we've installed House Speaker, conservative Mike Johnson, and what is he going to do? He's going to fund the war in Ukraine.
So there's four separate bills. Everyone would be able to give it an up or down vote based on their own merits, and that's what they desire. Now, listen, we made a better product as well, because there is Ukraine, as you know, is controversial. What we did, Jake, in this package, we changed it. 80% of the spending for Ukraine is replenishment of American weapons and stocks. That's a really important thing for our own U.S. industrial base and defense base, and that's going to be a very important part of it. And we added other innovations that conservatives like and that make good sense. I mean, for the Ukraine piece, for example, any assistance that goes for governmental aid is converted to a loan. That's what a lot of people said was very important, and we implemented that. You know, there's a lot of innovations here, and I think it's a better product in the end.
Okay, I am not going to attack Mike Johnson. You're not going to see me doing it. And the reason is the same thing that I said when they announced that McCarthy was getting kicked out, which is Kevin McCarthy. I'm not totally defending McCarthy here. He did some establishment swampy kind of things, but Kevin McCarthy was arguably the most conservative speaker House Republicans had had since the 1950s, probably since Joe Martin in the 50s. Maybe Newt, depending on the moment, would have been. He was certainly a more significant speaker, but he might have been more conservative, but I don't know. Actually, issue by issue, probably Kevin McCarthy was. And he got thrown out. Probably it was his own fault that he got thrown out because he gave his opponents the opportunity. But then they floated all these names as possible replacements. I said, I hope it's not Jim Jordan. I hope it's not this guy. I hope it's not that guy. Why? Because I like those guys and I don't wish this job on my worst enemy. Speaker of the House, if you're a Republican, is probably the worst job in Washington. And then they pick this guy, Mike Johnson, who is great. This is an ADF lawyer, strong conservative, religious conservative, social conservative. The guy's great. And what happens? In the end, he's got to fund the Ukraine war. In the end, he's got to play ball with the establishment. And people are going to huff and puff and scream. They might even throw him out of office. But you know what? Then they're going to install the next guy and the same thing's going to happen to the next guy. This was inevitable. This was baked in from the beginning. Why is that? Because just within the Republican conference, the conservatives are not that strong. The real right-wing, rowdy conservatives, there just aren't that many of them. There are a lot of squishes and more moderate and establishment type politicians in the Republican conference. And you got to pull their votes along too. The rock-ribbed, right-wing, hardcore conservatives just don't have the votes. Then beyond that, Congress doesn't have that much juice either because our government is not run like the bill up on Capitol Hill, like Schoolhouse Rock. We have the House of Representatives, which is one half of the U.S. Congress, and you got the upper house, the upper chamber, the U.S. Senate, and then you got the administrative agencies, and then you've got the Pentagon, and then you've got all sorts of money flowing around that is totally unaccountable, and you've got the State Department, and you have U.S. policy being made with pretty much no regard for the people who get elected every 2 years. Because the way Washington works is you've got the elected people and you've got the career people, right? So you got the talent that come in every 2 years and then they leave. And then you got the career people. You've got the staff for those electeds, and the staff are going to be there often longer than the electeds will. And then you've got the bureaucrats, the deep state. You've got the guys who work for all the agencies who are going to be there forever, man. So who do you think is going to have a bigger say in policy, especially when we're talking about foreign policy, especially when we're talking about grand strategy? The Ukraine war simply will be funded. It's just a fact. We can huff and puff and cry about it, but it's just going to happen. And any Republican Speaker of the House is going to get rolled. That's how it goes. If you want to fix that, you're not going to fix that on the Ukraine funding bill or the Israel funding bill or, I don't know, I wish we had an Armenia funding bill, but we don't. You're not going to fix it there. These are going to be long-term structural fixes to how the government actually operates. Now, speaking of violence, an Indianapolis judge has just found a woman not guilty for smothering her child to death while high on meth. The woman allegedly admitted that she smothered her 3-month-old baby with a pillow while she was high on meth in order to stop the baby from crying. Little 3-month-old baby crying out for mommy, and mommy, high on meth and tired, decides to smother the baby to death rather than meet her needs. This woman's 3-year-old daughter reportedly saw this happen, testified that this happened. And the judge in this case, here's his ruling.
Court accordingly enters judgment of not guilty, reluctantly. I do hope that you all take the opportunity to get the counseling that you need, to get the counseling for the children that you need, that you learn from this behavior, and hopefully the rest of the community learns from this behavior, that you cannot go out and party on the weekend and be with children.
Toxicology report did show meth in Daisha Lacey's system, but Judge Mark Stoner said if she had been charged with reckless homicide or involuntary manslaughter, he could have found her guilty. But she's not guilty of neglect of the dependent, resulting in death.
So the guy's admitting, yeah, you killed your kid. You killed your 3-month-old baby because you were high on meth. And if you had been charged with this type of killing your kid while high on meth or this type of killing your kid while high on meth, maybe I would have found you guilty. But instead, because you were charged with criminal neglect leading to the death of an infant, I'm going to find you not guilty. Why? Because she was too active in the killing of her child? Because it actually wasn't neglectful. She intentionally killed her child. So something isn't adding up for me here. And then you hear that judge speak. He says, regretfully, okay, I find you not guilty. Now, I could have found you guilty because you did murder your kid. You totally killed your kid because you were high on meth and you murdered your sweet little baby. But look, I think this can be a teachable moment. I think it's going to be, look, we all make mistakes. And I guess usually we have to pay for our mistakes, but you won't have to pay for anything. You won't face any consequences whatsoever. And I think we all can learn a lesson here, can't we? And the lesson we can learn is you shouldn't stay out quite so late at those parties, okay? Be around children. The party is the problem. We're not talking about a cocktail soiree with a jazz quartet. We're talking about a woman getting high on meth and going home and murdering her kid, her little baby. Well, it's a teachable moment for, and it's not a teachable moment for me. I don't do that. I'm never going to do that. There but for the grace of God go I, to quote Norm MacDonald, no river so long doesn't contain a bend. I guess theoretically it could happen, but I don't think I'm at great risk of that. I don't think you're at great risk of that. This woman did something heinous. that was so easily preventable, probably 20 steps along the way, and the judge lets her off the hook completely. There's a line from Adam Smith, the author of Wealth of Nations, you know, the man credited with inventing capitalism, basically, you know, the Enlightenment era writer, who was actually a moral philosopher first. The line is, "Mercy to the guilty is cruelty to the innocent." Now, I don't believe this line totally, because I'm Christian, and we know that the quality of mercy is a wonderful thing. And we know that, though justice be thy plea, consider this, that in the course of justice, none of us should see salvation. We like mercy. Mercy is a quality of God's, actually, and it pulls us closer to God the more that we render the acts of mercy, of course. And at the same time, the civil authority must have some kind of justice. We call it the justice system. There's no justice here whatsoever. A grave, grave miscarriage of justice that you see, well, just about any time we turn on a courtroom news story today, it seems that justice has been not only perverted, but in some cases just totally inverted. In this case, the woman who murders a kid is the victim. The poor little kid is barely talked about. The traumatized other kid, maybe get her some counseling or something. Move along. That doesn't fix any problem. It only makes the problems worse. It's been 2 years of fighting the left with great products from Jeremy's Razors, and we are only getting better. Jeremy's second generation razors are here. You'll notice the reconstructed ergonomic handle for superior durability and improved coated stainless steel blades that last longer. Plus, enjoy more flexibility for a close shave without nicks or cuts. For those who meticulously craft their masculine look, introducing Jeremy's new Precision 5 razor, completely transformed with a precision trimmer and enhanced comfort thanks to the improved lubrication strip. Experience an exceptionally smooth and close shave with added durability to withstand those accidental drops. If shaving feels like a chore, meet the new Sprint 3 with open blade geometry for a swift, clean shave, allowing you to get back to your manly pursuits in no time. Razors not made in China. Razors made right. Progress that is not progressive. Head on over to jeremysrazors.com to upgrade to your new second-gen razor today. My favorite comment yesterday is from Victor Montero Adame 7847, man, who says how the Apostle Paul defined intellectuals, quote, "Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools." Romans 1:22. So true. Speaking of killing, very violent episode today. An Uber driver was just shot and killed as the result of a telephone scam. This is one of the weirdest stories I have seen in a really long time. Reported by CBS News, there was an 81-year-old Ohio man who received scam calls. Maybe you've heard of these kinds of scam calls where an older person will get a call, say, you know, either I'm a young relative of yours, or I've arrested a young relative of yours, or I've kidnapped a young relative of yours, and you got to send me money or your relative's going to be in trouble. In fact, my grandfather got one of these calls some years ago. They really do target senior citizens. So this 81-year-old gets the call that involved threats and demands. An unknown man told him over the phone he needed to pay 12 grand to get his nephew out of jail. And this guy told the police that the caller threatened him and his nephew if he didn't pay the ransom. So he said, okay, I'm going to come by and I'm going to collect this money. Give me the money, at the door. So what the scammer does is he doesn't go to collect the money. He hires an Uber driver, sends an Uber driver over there. And the Uber driver is just some woman, some like nice woman who has no idea what's going on. And the Uber driver is just told to go collect a package. So goes over there. I guess this would be, I didn't realize you could even do this until some years ago. But you can send an Uber driver to just go get stuff from a house and then take it somewhere else. So that's what happened. This poor Uber driver shows up and she has no idea what's going on. And the guy shoots her. So she was obviously unarmed. But when she gets there, the guy says, "Get in the house. You know, where's my nephew? What's going on?" And he holds this woman at gunpoint. She says, "I have no idea what you're talking about." He's like, "Sure enough, you have no idea what I'm talking about." And this is a situation where you really, really feel for both of the parties who are involved in the violence, in that this guy has every reason to believe that this woman knows where his nephew is threatening his nephew's life. I'd consider holding the woman at gunpoint too, to get to the bottom of this. Now, maybe you call the cops the moment you get the threat. Maybe that was the smart thing to do. But in any case, the woman's saying, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. And then he shoots her. There was a scuffle at the door and he shot her. So he's now being charged with murder, carries a penalty of 15 years to life in prison. A bail was set at 200 grand. Horrible story. I really feel, obviously I feel for the woman and her family. I really feel for this guy, this 81-year-old guy, who the only person who's really committed a crime here, as far as I'm concerned, is the scammer. And the scammer, we don't even know his identity because he just made a phone call. Scammers and fraudsters are the lowest of the low. I mean, these are the people who are in some of the lowest circles of hell, according to Dante. They are, they're just like the worst people on earth. And they're emboldened to get away with it. Why? Because of a novel technological fact of our age, which is that technology allows us to pretend to be another person. Sure, you could always put on the Groucho glasses and lie about your identity, but it was a little harder when you're there in flesh and blood, you're putting on a performance. Here, with the advent of telephones and certainly with computers, you can live a digital life. And you can convince yourself that your digital virtual life is not connected to your real life. And we all do this to some degree. We all do. We get online and we put on a new persona. A lot of people, probably the clearest example is looking at pornography. Very few people want to admit to looking at pornography in public, but what is it, 90%+ of men look at it or have looked at it in private because you say, oh, well, that's not my real life. You know, you open up the incognito, meaning, you know, I'm totally unknown, I'm totally anonymous. But even beyond that, let's say you don't look at porn. I bet you're on social media. And when people go on social media, they become monsters. They become different people. They're nasty. They're wrathful. They're cruel. They're envious. They're prideful. They're all, why? Because you say, well, it's not real life. Twitter is not real life. That's what we say. But it is real life. It is real life. And imagine you're the scammer here in this case. You're just trying to make some money off an old guy. Now a woman is dead because of it, and that old guy is going to die in prison because you pulled a little prank, because you made a phone call. You think, well, making a phone call can't be that violent. Well, it's killed one person. It sort of killed two people in the sense that this guy's going to die in prison now. You are always you. Liberal modernity wants to compartmentalize us, divide us, alienate us from ourselves. The extreme of this, transgenderism, tries to alienate us from our own bodies, from our own identities. You can't really do that. It's not possible. You are yourself. Every action you undertake, whether it's supposedly incognito or whether it's in the visible physical world, it all has effects in the visible physical world, some of which are palpable. The rest of the show continues now. You don't want to miss it. Become a member and use code Knowles, KNWLES, at checkout for 2 months free on all annual plans.